Welcome to the Hype Leadership Podcast. David and Lindsay Curry are dynamic entrepreneurs focused in high-performance leadership and coaching in sales and service. Through the Hype Leadership Podcast, David and Lindsay strive to serve in your journey towards a high-performance life. And now, here are your hosts, David and Lindsay Curry.
Welcome to Hype Leadership Podcast. My name is Lindsay Curry, and today I have my wonderful husband, David Curry, my co-host today. But I am so excited to jump into this episode today. Chris Derry, a seasoned leader, entrepreneur, and coach with a diverse background in sales and consulting. He has held leadership roles at Edward Jones, Invesco, and J&W Seligman, and co-founder Waycross Partners in Ziplines. As a former sales executive in residence at WKU, he has mentored countless professionals. Through his consulting firm, he continues to coach sales teams for greater success. A dedicated Rotarian and founder at Kentucky's Bluegrass Institute, Chris is passionate about leadership, integrity, and professional growth. He and his wife, Nancy, live on a beautiful farm in Kentucky, and I'm so excited for my coach, mentor, Chris Derry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. It's my pleasure.
I'm so excited to have you here.
Yes, me too. It should be a fun episode and very, very educational, I believe. So I know I will speak to that because Chris has been one to educate us. We are probably lower on that totem pole of long list of accomplishments. But Chris, I would accredit you to a lot of maybe even the reason why we named our company High Performance, right? You in the business of coaching folks to be their best and become better every day. And I would say a lot of our growth has stemmed off of your teachings. So I want to thank you for that. And thank you for being here.
My pleasure, David.
Yeah, it should be fun. So again, like Lindsay said, Chris has been a big mentor to us personally, but then also to our business. And I think he has used a tool that's been very near and dear to his heart for a long time that we're going to unpack with you all today. And as always, we theme these podcasts and shows around a quote. And this quote has meant something to us for a long time. I kind of remember this from when we were introduced to each other maybe back in 2015-16. But this quote that we are going to roll off of this week is, the more time you waste chasing the wrong people, the longer it's going to take you to find the right one. And that's from Mel Robbins, leadership coach and expert in today's times. And Chris, when you think about that, what does that mean in a summary to yourself?
Well, what it means is for years and years and years, I tried my darndest to use an assessment to predict whether someone is going to be successful. And it was never consistent until I realized that that was impossible because an assessment can't predict what all of the variables in a human being. But what I discovered finally is that you could use it to figure out who not to hire. And that's made all the difference.
It does. Yeah, I remember when you said that to us. You know, you said, look, we are not using this DISC tool to identify the right person. We are looking to identify the people that don't need to be here.
They're wonderful people, but they should work someplace else. Well, you know, what Glenn and I did at the beginning is we identified the 10 top producers. And then we winnowed down the DISC characteristics to a benchmark. And so then when we would run the assessment, people who were so far out of the benchmark, we would say, you're a wonderful person. Here are your strengths, here are your limitations, but you should look for a job with someone else. You're not going to like this, and you're not going to be fulfilled by this position.
Absolutely. And I recall in 2017 when Chris had approached me at our Christmas party and said, hey, I can help you get to first place. I can help your team grow and get to first place. And that's all I needed to hear. And I'm like, man, I'm in. And I tell you, I just want to share with listeners that our growth doubled that following year. And I want to say thank you to you, Chris. And I know we're going to dive into the DISC and motivators and language, but it's the power of understanding who you're talking to, right? And how to get on their street.
Yeah. And me personally, one thing that's meant a lot to me that has helped over the years is not only understanding who you're talking to, but maybe understanding yourself even better, you know, understanding the way.
Remember, it was Socrates who said, know thyself, the unexamined life is not worth living.
That's right. I love taking it back so far, right? It just goes to show that the people game has not changed that much, mm-mm, right? And we are in the people business. Chris, I wanted to ask you, we'll take this kind of a long way back because I know from our conversations, you know, you're a young professional aspiring success. And, you know, I don't remember all the story, but DISC language is what we're going to unpack today at its core, right? DISC. If you don't know what that is, pay attention. You will by the end of this show today. But Chris, I wanted to ask you if you could recall when you personally were introduced to DISC and just maybe the light bulbs that we've all had go off in our heads. But what was that like for you that you said, this is it?
Well, David, a fellow in Dallas, Texas, I can't even remember his name, invited me to come to watch the Dallas Cowboys. And so my car was not working, and I persuaded my wife to drive her RX-7 all the way to Dallas. And so I'm sitting, so I arrive, he's on the phone, and I sit down. And he flips me a DISC, you know, the old way that we used to operate computers, a DISC, and said, hey, take a look at this. I got this in the mail, and went back on his call. So I put it in his computer and click, 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 click. And I started answering these questions. And then off of his dot matrix printer came this evaluation of me, and it talked about me. And I thought, how in the hell? Something do that. Yeah. You don't know me. How can you do this? Bingo. So Monday, the following, I called the president of a company and said, what is this thing? And he laughed and explained it to me. And he said, you want to be a distributor? And I said, yeah. Well, I was number 11. So Bill Bonstetter, bless his heart, great guy. And I used to call him all the time to understand, you know, this particular profile and this particular and how this one was. And I was so persistent that in his conference in January, he said, I've created for all you guys an interpretation of DISC because I'm never spending enough time with anybody else as I spent with Chris Derry. I forced him to teach me.
That is a similar story to, I think, when we were all introduced to DISC. It was, and I've heard that so many times. The same thing. These people that sit down at the computer for 20 minutes to 30 minutes, and next thing you know, you're kind of opening up some of the deepest, darkest thoughts that they may have about themselves and how they operate or what they think about somebody else. And it does. It changes the perspective you may have towards something.
Know thyself. And, you know, we can never know ourselves well enough. It's a continuous process that we go on. Once we recognize we don't know ourselves as much as we should, which is the first step to understanding how we're different and similar to other people, which helps us. Oh, we're going to get into this later.
Well, Chris, let me ask you this, because I do recall when you sat down with our leadership team probably 7 or 8 years ago, and we did take the assessment. And like you said, it's these things that are in your subconscious that you know about yourself, but no one's actually point blank told you, or maybe they did and you weren't listening. And then I remember sitting down with Dave and he's like, this isn't me. This isn't me. And I'm like, this is you. And I'm like, and Kevin and I were laughing at ourselves because my limitation is organization. And I'm like, this is exactly me. Oh my gosh, that's why I do this. And so I fell in love with the language and fell in love because when you say know thyself, the more that you know yourself, the better that you can lean into your strengths and you can know how to adapt on your weaknesses.
Bingo.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. So how can you unpack, and I know this is a loaded question, but a broad scope for our listeners of the DISC language and the motivators?
Sure. Well, DISC started with the author of a book, William Marston. He wrote a book called The Emotions of Normal People. Now, when you think about that, it's not Freudian. It's normal people. Most of us are normal. And so Marston wrote this book. He was a genius. And he identified four factors that involve and encompass all human beings, the personalities of all human beings. Those four factors are dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance. Those come from Marston. So dominance. This is the problem factor. People high in dominance like to solve problems. They like to get results. People who are lower in dominance get to solve problems slower. Influence is people. When you're high in people, it means you like to engage with other people. You get your energy when you're around people. If you're low in influence, it means you get your energy when you're by yourself. Steady. When you're high in steadiness, you prefer a slow, steady, methodical pace. You're a good listener. When you're low in steadiness, this is the pace variable. So the pace quickens the lower the score. And lower doesn't mean bad. It just means low intensity on steadiness. So you move from patient to impatient. Last is compliance. This is the procedures factor. So when you're high in procedures, it means you wish to comply with rules set by others. You are sensitive to the details. As you move lower in compliance, you move toward non-compliance. Instead of doing things the correct way, you like to do things your way. That's DISC simplified.
I love it. There is so much there. And, you know, when you're really, to our listeners, if you're just thinking about yourself and just a few words that you shared, you can identify, okay, I'm like this, I'm not like that. Because that will get people thinking, am I in the right position right now, currently at my career or my job, whatever it is that I'm moving towards?
You know, Lindsay, along with that thought, if someone does not like their job, then many times they're doing their best to be successful or to survive in the job, but they're having to use behaviors that are different than the ones that they bring to the job. So in order to love your work, one of the inputs is, are you using the behaviors that are natural to you to succeed on the job? Now, sometimes we screw ourselves up when we are responding to the job irrationally. And I remember an old conversation I had with Bill Bonstetter. And I flashed my profile in front of Bill and I said, tell me about this guy. And he said, oh, this guy probably owns a business. And then the first graph, of course, is your natural style, you with your friends and family. But the work style is how you see yourself behaving on the job, either to succeed or survive. Bill looked at that graph and he said, whoa, this guy is having trouble in his business. I said, Bill, that's me. And he said, I'll bet you're not making as much money as you used to. I said, how did you know that? So, I mean, I was hooked.
Hooked on it.
Yeah. So I have had 11 career changes in my life. Matter of fact, I'm on 12 right now. So every time I made a career change, I did it with DISC. It was either profiling my boss, profiling the people around me, who I was going to be working with, because I'd learned that my success was not about me, but it was how well I communicated the way someone else wanted me to communicate. When I made that switch, the switch from how I feel to what I should do, that makes all the difference. And that's what we call at Orca, going down someone's street.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you this, for our listeners that are listening in, and you're thinking about sales, you're thinking about sales, what are some of those driving motivators that would succeed in sales?
Well, yeah, let's switch gears here.
All right.
We've been talking about DISC, which is an answer to the question of how you do what you do. That's a very thin veneer, okay? It's not why, it's not how well, it's not what, it's not all the answers to those other questions. It's just how. Now, when you peel back how, then you can ask the question of why. Why do you do what you do? And what we've learned is that there are certain motivators that if they're in place, if they resonate with people, then they feel fulfilled as they engage with their job. So this is Edward Spranger in a book he wrote in 1914 called Types of Men. In that book, he identifies 6 core motivators. They are the business motivators. 1, the theoretical drive, the drive to learn, to know. 2, return on investment. Return on investment is return on investment of time, energy, resources. Someone who is motivated that way will apply this to their decision-making subconsciously. They always want to get the highest return on investment of their time, energy, and resources. That's one characteristic that tends to succeed in sales. The third one is leadership. On the inside on leadership, this is wanting to become the best version of myself. The external one is, on leadership, is the natural desire to want to lead people, to be in charge. Now, the fourth one is the social drive, the drive to want to help people. And if you think about this one, this is one that's not personal. This is a drive to want to help others. And what we've discovered in insurance sales is that our best insurance salespeople either have this drive to want to help people, or they need to apply it. And applying it says, I need to master DISC and motivators in the selling process so that I can convey to others my want to be able to help them. Now, next is guiding principles. And guiding principles is to abide by what I believe in. And last is the aesthetic. The aesthetic is the drive to want to be in beautiful surroundings. And the kissing cousin that comes out of that from my manufacturer of my assessments is not only so to differentiate aesthetic from the visual part to the feeling component. We call this peace and harmony. And what we've discovered in terms of salespeople who have difficulty is the aesthetic, because Orca Life agents call on people who live in all kinds of situations. And sometimes they're not visually, aesthetically pleasing. And second, peace and harmony, which is wanting to do what I feel like doing, and then the corollary, not wanting to do what I don't feel like doing. Those are distractions that will cause agents over time to not be fulfilled. You know, it just doesn't feel right. So when those are lower, it helps a person when they get into the business, if they like it with moderately good behaviors, appropriate behaviors, they like it. And then over time, they're fulfilled. And when they do that, they stay put.
Yeah, that is that. And that's been a lot of learning for us, right? You know, the assessment that Chris is describing to folks is a, I think, 57 page or so rundown of these attributes, characteristics of potential new hires that we may have at Orca. Mm-hmm. And again, it's been a 8-year learning process for ourselves. And we were introduced to you in 2016. And I don't think at that time, you know, we had a couple of students of yours from WKU that have been through the program. They kind of been introduced on a surface level to the DISC language and felt like this could be a beautiful thing for us here at Orca and really help us out. But we didn't know what we didn't know, I would say, at that point.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was Glenn. So I profiled Glenn on October 25th.
Okay.
Of 2015.
Yeah.
And he, after I went over the assessment, he said, "Chris, can I use this to find more agents?" And I said, "No, Glenn. I've tried for 30 years. There's not enough information in an assessment to predict what a human, the success of a human being. But I said, I can tell you who not to hire." And I mean, instantaneously, he said, "That's what I want."
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, at that point of our business, we were so excited about the opportunity that we were experiencing. And maybe just because it naturally fit for a lot of us, that we were ready to bring anybody and anybody under the sun that you know, anybody.
Log a mirror. We're going to interview them.
Yeah, of course. Right. You know, we need to grow our business. We need new people. We can't do it all ourselves. Everybody can do this. We can teach anybody.
Well, you can teach them, but will they learn? And will they apply? You know, integrity is the best definition that I've ever heard, and I try my best to apply, is it aligns what you know with what you do and what you say. So you can teach someone all the metrics and all the skills, but if they don't do it because they don't feel like doing it, it fails. That's why the insurance industry is plagued with what they call the 8% rule.
Yeah, I think
8% of the people who begin in insurance sales in 1 year are left. The other 92%?
Yes, no, absolutely. And, you know, actually, Chris, when we went to that conference in 2018, the first 8% Nation conference, we walked away from that saying, "Hey, we really need to look at our business and we really need to figure out, we want to keep that." And at this point, over 65% of our first year agents make it. And why? I would say one of the number one reasons is because we do utilize this assessment that helps us not hire, because I don't want to promise somebody, "Hey, you're going to make $80,000 your first year." If I look at the assessment and I know that they don't enjoy talking to people, they're not motivated by ROI or learning or helping others, it's going to be hard for them to be somebody who they aren't naturally.
Bingo. They won't like it.
Correct.
So, yeah, it is. It is hard.
The second portion of this that I've enjoyed helping you improve is once you bring the people who have the potential to succeed in, how do you keep them? So the report that David talked about, this 50, 60 page report, it's too long, I know. The beginning of it has a couple pages that are essential in helping the leader understand the new agent. And then you have learned how to use those first couple pages in the onboarding process. And Lindsay, you talked about this all the time.
Yes. And truly, the first couple pages, and then really their natural characteristics. So just going, so what this assessment does, I believe it's on page 7, it gives their natural characteristics and what you can do with that potential new hire. If they're like, I don't understand if this is really me, you go through each line because it talks about them, and then you allow them to explain if they agree, if they disagree, and how they would change it. And so you, as the hiring them, you can understand them better. And so that really, that's helped tremendously.
Yeah. What this does subconsciously is it helps you begin to understand how to respond cognitively with your thought process versus the feeling portion in the old cerebellum. If we meet someone who's different than we are, naturally we think, you're weird. Because I'm pretty good, but so what this does is this crosses over from the feeling to the cognitive. So you can say, oh, you like to do this. I think that's weird. This person goes, oh yeah, that's me. So it helps us determine the maturity of the candidate.
Yes.
But what we've found is that sometimes a person can come in with not all of the behaviors that we're looking for, but they have sold before. They've developed a sense of maturity, and they already have learned the habit of not doing what I feel like doing, but doing what I should do. That's called a habit. So once they have created these habits, that enables them to go out in the field. Because if they've got return on investment, they got that locked in. If they've got leadership, I want to become the best version of myself. Boy, you combine that with, and I'm going to learn what to do to help people. Wow. Then they can create habits that counter some natural personality characteristics that they might not do naturally.
Yeah, and I guess as I think about what you said earlier about identifying normal, right? That what I'm hearing is almost that there are different categories of normal, right? There's different people. There, my normal is my normal. Chris's normal is Chris's normal. Lindsay's right. Normal is her normal.
Bingo.
And I was going to ask kind of why has this been? Because it really has been a wonderful tool that Lindsay and I think our marriage and just our relationship with each other grew and changed as over the years of just understanding. So in your opinion, Chris, why is that what I just wondered why is it so effective? You know, because it certainly has been for us. And, you know, you hear these people talk about all these other personality profiles and all of the above, you know, I know there's two or three that people would recognize the names of personality profiles that are used out there. DISC, I feel like it does encompass everybody, but why is it so effective in building better communication between people?
Well, it can be effective in building good communications between people if both parties are willing to stop responding here and you respond more here. Now, this is not fail-safe. This is not perfect. A good relationship between a man and a woman is always going to have emotional issues because the attraction of love, unfortunately, we're attracted to people who are different than we are. I'm falling in love, like, oh, you have this. I don't. But then what happens is it begins to get in the way. The things that you love then begin to create, you begin to see, to feel the limitations. For instance, there are people who have in relationships whose eye is high. Now, we slip a little bit when we say high eyes, like we label a person as a high eye. The process that I've taught you is not that. So Lindsay is not a high eye. She happens to have a D and an I and an S above the midline and a low C. All that means something. And what that means is it generates certain tendencies. And once you can look at those tendencies, then you can say, oh, yeah, that is me. Then when you look at your partner and you realize, oh, my goodness, my partner, David, Lindsay's eye is high. She likes being around people. She's enthusiastic. She smiles. She engages. She gets her energy when she's around people. David, on the other hand, he can do it for a while, but then he has to be by himself because he gets his energy when he's by himself. And what upsets David naturally about Lindsay is she talks too much. And David says, just what do you want? Just compress it.
So when I ask him, what's he thinking about at night? I'm like, what are you thinking about? And he's like,
here's what I'm thinking about. So. Interestingly, with relationships, the low eyes, when the high eye will shut up, the low eye will talk at length. And because David also has a strong sense of wanting to know, a high theoretical drive, when Lindsay opens that, David begins to talk, and he'll talk about what he knows. And Lindsay then goes, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's really good. Okay, I get it.
And therefore, the opposites attract. Yeah.
But does this work perfectly? No. This is why in a marriage, you decide at the altar, I'm committed to this person. Come hell or high water, I'm going to work this out. And when you make that decision, then this can help. Because it will help you understand why you get so damn mad at someone who's just being himself. Like, wait a minute. I can't do that. That's David. I love him. So what do I do? Bingo. Now you begin to put more mortar around those blocks so that you can stay put and like each other as much as you love them.
That's right. There's a
that correctly.
Did you? Do you love me? Yes. Do you like me? I'm not sure. No. And as I'm thinking, just to kind of simplify, and maybe, you know, what you're saying about going from the feeling, the emotion to the thought is a maturity process. Mm-hmm. And here's the one thing, the example that I continually am seeing in my head, and you guys can, you know, adjust this so needed for the audience to get to grasp. But for me, I'm thinking, okay, because what does that mean? Right. And to me, it means in a simple example is like, we're driving our car down the street and some lunatic rushes their car right in front of us, cuts us off at a high speed, and we've got our kids and we're slamming the brakes on. And the immediate emotion is, I want to run this guy right off the road.
Ooh,
right?
Road rage.
What a
deity.
But most logical people in the world would then go from that feeling of what I would like to do in this moment to, we clearly should not do that. And that's the difference between the emotion that is stricken to the thought that
then creates the action, right? So, Chris, what is that? What helps that? Or what is, because like you said, it's a choice, maybe. Some people choose to just live through those emotions. And
well, what happens is, if you respond emotionally, well, first of all, the first thought that enters, most times it comes from our environment, outside in. So the general rule is, don't act on the first thought. Mm-hmm. Act on the second one. And the second one is, this is what I feel like doing, ramming this guy in the back. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop and I'm going to say over my shoulder, hey, kids, that's what you don't do when you drive.
Right.
They're watching you. They're watching how you respond. And you are building in bad habits or good habits to your kids continually. You want them to have good habits? You show them good habits. Just like, David, when you are coaching an agent.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that Orca is using is to be able, for agents, for leaders, to be able to understand themselves, applying DISC and motivators. And then when they coach someone, they know, because they have the assessment, they read it, they discuss it with the person, they go over the communication pages on page 10, and they uncover, this is how you want to be communicated to, and this is what you don't like. And as the leader, what I must do is abide by those. If I do that, then the person builds a relationship with me. That's not about me, but it's about them. And when I do that, the likelihood that they're going to stay improves. Over and over and over, we hear stories of managers, leaders of people who've screwed that up. Why do people leave their jobs? I hated my manager.
Yeah.
He didn't treat me well. Well, what that means is he didn't treat me the way I want to be treated.
Yeah.
Well, you see, good mothers do this. If you've got more than one child, you've learned, number one comes out and, oh, I figured out how to handle this one. Then number two comes out and you go, oh my God, how do I handle this one? And you learn. And then number three comes out, I got to learn this one right here.
Mm-hmm.
So moms can do it here. They build in that embrace. You know, they have empathy and they can manage their kids. The father says, talk to your mother. So you, when you're managing someone else, they want you to listen to them. They want you to understand them, because they have natural problems that they haven't figured out, that if you communicate well, you help them uncover the solutions to their problems. And when you do, they smile and they go back to work and they're productive. Isn't that what you want?
Yeah.
Is this hard or is this easy?
Oh, we say it's simple. Certainly not easy.
But it's not easy, right?
And that's the sales process too, right? I mean, it really is the same thing when you're operating with those folks for our sales agents. And a lot of times it's understanding the same language when those sales folks are working with their client and getting on their street and maybe moving to things that's kind of what we've seen. So I love the second thought. Right. We say, look, you're not responsible for your first thought, but we are responsible for the action and the second thought that comes after that. And then, Chris, I'll just accredit you, and I'm sure, I don't know where it came from, you can tell us, but I'll never forget what you said. Right. Most of us were raised by the golden rule. You know, you do unto others as you would want done to yourself. But you were the one to enlighten me in sales. And that was that there is a platinum rule out there. And that is, you do unto others as they want done to themselves.
That's it. I can't claim ownership to that. I'm aware I got that. Frankly, guys, I don't know if I have an original thought. I just try to learn from everybody else and everything else.
I love it. Chris, thank you so much. Do you have any final words for any of our listeners today before we wrap up?
Well, leaders are always frustrated with how their agents, their people, their kids are responding to them. And so, number one, stop blaming. Take responsibility for your behavior. Know thyself, like yourself. This is me. This is the only one I've got. And then recognize that my success in my life is probably going to be based on how well I communicate and treat others. And DISC and motivators are the languages that help you transfer from here to here. Oh boy.
Love it. Know thyself and take responsibility. Chris, thank you. Thank you so much. You've been such a mentor and coach, and we're so grateful for you to be on this episode today. And thank you to all of our listeners, and we will see you all next week.
David and Lindsay Curry are focused on high-performance coaching and sales and service. Reach out today at 502-314-2789 or visit hype.financial. That's hype.financial to learn more. Thanks for listening to the Hype Leadership Podcast.